I'm Gab, he's Jules. Blue skies over West London. What a show, because the Champions League is back.
Oh, yes.
We'll be looking at both semi-finals. We'll have the usual quick hits, all that stuff you love. But let's start with Real Madrid and Manchester City. It finishes 1-1, and my Real Madrid supporting friend said, this is great. I love the fact that the away goals rule is gone. Second leg, this is like a final. You go in there, you win this game. Real Madrid, by hook or by crook, tends to win finals.
Yeah.
And he's feeling really, really good about himself.
Yeah.
And Should he be feeling good about himself?
And my Man City friends saying, this is great. Really good result. We take a draw back home. We played well. We didn't give them much, which is what they wanted. And now we go home. In our stadium, we favourite to go through to the final, which I love. All I wanted, Gab, I was there. All I wanted, I didn't want a game that was too cagey. It was cagey. I think the two managers wanted it to be cagey. They didn't want to take too many risks, which in the end, maybe if you were watching on television, you thought the lack of tempo and rhythm was a bit, maybe it was all too slow, which I completely understand, especially the first half. But it's just perfectly poised for the second leg. And I think that's all what people should care about now is that we're going to have a hell of a game in that second leg.
We had a hell of a game in this first leg.
Yeah, but in a different way. Do you know what I mean?
No, it could be in a different way. I don't blame them about being caged. There's no question. Pep was more cautious than they would normally be. But, like, this is Real Madrid against Madrid. This is a Champions League semi-final, right? You're not going and playing an opponent that you're familiar with. You're not playing some mid-table side in England that's already intimidated by you. I think a lot when City play people or when Real Madrid play opponents, they're intimidated, So I don't expect them to play a million miles an hour, take chances, not when you've got, you know, Vinicius, the fastest thing on two legs. Although Kyle Walker, as we found out, is also pretty quick. I got no issue with that whatsoever. I did think in the first 20 minutes, and you were there in person, in the atmosphere, I thought to myself, how are they going to match Manchester City?
Yeah.
And they did. And they did with a very simple tactical shift. Real Madrid started 4-3-3, obviously, with Rodrigo and Vinicius wide. And he moved Modric, essentially, kind of in between Stones, who would step when they were in possession. Stones would obviously step into midfield, as we'd seen, Stones and Rodri. And all of a sudden, that really, really blunted Manchester City's ability to move the ball quickly and kind of asphyxiate them the way they had done in the first 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's right, Gab. And also Valverde's positioning, dropping next to Cruz, basically, to make a double pivot instead of just having Cruz as the holding midfielder. That worked because, okay, Kevin De Bruyne scored, but apart from the goal, you didn't see much of him because I think Cruz and Valverde did a really good job there. And then for Modric, it made that City with Stones and Rodri also had to be very careful. And the kind of 4-2-3-1 worked better for Real Madrid in the second half where they were a bit more expensive with the ball and put City under more pressure than they did in the first half. I mean, the stats of the half-time with the 32% of the ball for Real Madrid, 115 or 125 passes, were really low. The XG is 0.06, the Vinicius goal,
right,
which was crazy at half-time. But you also knew that in the second half, that the second half would be different, would be better. And to be fair, I think Real Madrid scored at a moment where City were the better team, and City scored at a moment where maybe Real Madrid were the better team, which, again, sums up very well the game.
It certainly happens. Two guys we didn't see much of were the reigning Ballon d'Or and the guy who scored 51 goals this season, Karim Benzema and Erling Haaland. Maybe different reasons for those two. We expect them in the second leg to pop up, or is it just the case that both teams says we can't take a chance with these two guys?
No, I think they will have more space, more service in the second leg than they had in the first leg, where we said it was a bit cagey, although Benzema had the header. Second half, Haaland had the through ball where Alaba, the last ditch tackle from Alaba, and the one before in the first half on the De Bruyne pass, so it could have been different. But yeah, when we prepared the game and set up the game, we went, oh, it's Benzema v Haaland, different profile, but look, blah, 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 one is 22, one is 35, etc. And in the end, that matchup was a bit like, so let's hope for better in the second leg.
After the first leg, you know, I love my percentages.
Yeah.
You had City going through, I had Real Madrid going through. How do you say it?
My eyes even changed, 51-49 or 55-45 if you prefer, like, slightly bigger. Okay. for City.
I'm going to lean Real Madrid again. I can go 51-49 if you like.
Yeah.
For one very, very simple reason, right? Manchester City are on track to do a treble this season. And it's really difficult to do a treble. I think very few English clubs have done a treble. Just the one, right? Manchester United. And that was in the last millennium. So if I ask myself, where are they most likely to derail? I look at who they have in the league. I feel better about their chances of winning the league than I do of winning the Champions League.
Yeah,
they could lose the FA Cup final, but I think they're overwhelming favorites for that. And so I say, most likely, they're going to go out. If they don't win the treble, it's going to happen in the Champions League. And it's either going to happen against Real Madrid or whoever they play in the final. And it's more likely to happen against Real Madrid. This is my rationale. That's the Marcotti method.
So you don't think City will win the treble this season?
I think it's unlikely. It's certainly possible, but I think it's unlikely.
You don't think so?
No, and it's the reason is there's three component parts to winning the treble, right? Yeah. So they have to beat Real Madrid and beat whoever in the final.
Yeah.
They have to beat Manchester United, and they have to win the league, right? You can work it out for yourself how likely it is, right? What is the percentage chance that City win the Premier League?
I'd say 70%,
okay.
30% for Arsenal. And I think, I'll tell you what, I think City will drop points against Everton this weekend.
Okay, there's another bold prediction we give you for free, but let's say, so 70%.
Yeah.
What is their percentage chance that they win the FA Cup?
I go 60-40, because I really believe United over one game can cause them problem by defending and not playing much.
And what is the percentage chance that they win?
55-45. I believe if they beat Real Madrid, then they're going to win the final, whether it's Milan or Inter in the final.
Okay, you say 55%. You said 51% chance to beat Real Madrid.
No, I said 51 or 55. I said...
Okay, if you gave them a 55% chance of Real Madrid, then it's 100% chance that they'll beat whatever team from Milan in the final.
Yeah, but right now they haven't beaten Real Madrid yet, so 55%.
Okay. So the way you establish...
Yeah.
Is you multiply these three percentages together, right?
Yeah.
And so 0.7 times 0.6 times 0.55, it's around, 23%?
Yeah.
Something like that? So it's less than a 1 in 4 chance of them winning the treble using your percentages, mine would be a little bit lower, like I said. But so...
No, I know. I know it's tough. I think they can do it. I think they've got the squad to do it.
No, I think they can. Nobody's doubting that they can do it. I think more likely than not, winning a treble, especially for an English club, is extremely, extremely difficult.
Yeah.
Right?
But,
And I think we're just taking for granted, like, oh, look, they're on track, they'll do it. It's really, really hard. If they do it, it's a tremendous achievement.
It's incredible. But I still think that they've got enough to beat Real Madrid next week. I think, in a way, for us, for them... For Pep and Carlo and the players, it would have been better to have a two-week break between the two semifinals, like it used to before. Now, the fact that they're back-to-back, one is a Tuesday, the following one is a Wednesday, there's no time in between. There will be a league game that Real Madrid don't care about, let's be honest here, because La Liga is gone. But City really care about going to Everton on Sunday afternoon. But I think everything the City players have in their head right now is that second leg. I can guarantee you they don't care about Everton. Pep is going to say, no, it's game after game and we focus on Everton. It's very... No, and he's going to rotate heavily, surely. Because that game next week is so huge for them. And I really think that after what they did at the Bernabeu, in the way they didn't give away too much to Real Madrid, they were good in position, they defended really well on Vinicius. Of course, he scored. But that's only the second goal, I think, in his career outside of the box. So, and again, we said the XG was 0.06. It was never going to happen.
I don't think the XG for De Bruyne's goal was much higher, by the way.
No, but you've seen more De Bruyne scoring goals like that than Vinicius scoring goals like that, right?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So I think they defended really well on Vinicius, which I think came to the detriment of what they did with the ball going forward, for sure, because you was clearly, especially we were quite high up at the Bernabeu, and you could see that they were just not committing too much forward because they knew that as soon as they lost the ball, there would be danger. And by the way, the goal from Vinicius doesn't even come from that. But the run by Camavinga is so amazing that it just opened up their whole defense and midfield.
Part of the reason I'm so excited for the second leg is Manchester City, I think, are a better side than Real Madrid. If they were in a league, I would expect Manchester City to win it, right? But... And we've talked about this before, matchups.
Mm.
They match up, Real Madrid match up really, really well with City. because of the characteristics they have. You mentioned Vinicius there, right? Vinicius forces Pep to disrupt the way he plays. And I don't know, is Nathan Aké going to be fit for the return leg?
So, yeah.
Then you have another call to make, because I presume you keep Walker in the side, right? Yeah. But then that means, for now at least, Manchester City aren't allowed to play with 12 players. So I'm assuming, does Akanji go out? Do you bring Aké back in? Again, that's a disruption. That's a change. The goalkeepers, you go back to this, Ederson can, on his day, can be a phenomenal goalkeeper. I think Courtois, though, is on a different level. Mm. And he's shown it, and he's done it before. Benzema didn't show up. Benzema's got an unusual skill set, right? That's something to think about.
It was very important sometimes to beat the press, though. Not that City pressed too crazy for the reasons that we mentioned already, but when they did, Benzema dropping in midfield, getting the ball. I mean, the first... You might have not liked the game because you thought it was too cagey, and with the players on the pitch, I think
Who didn't like the game?
No, because I think maybe some people expected before the game to have this incredible match where you would attack and with this. And in the end, especially the first half, when a team has 32% of the ball, Gab, and they're playing at home with the players that Real Madrid have, it's not.
The other team's attacking.
But I think some people wanted maybe more of an open game, which I can really understand. However, the technical level of that game was just out of this world. And Benzema's first touches through the whole game was just incredible.
No, and I think it's also a big thing, too, that players like Kroos and Modric, you know, they can't do it week in, week out at the level they used to. Mm. But for a one-off game with the adrenaline, with the horse placenta, in Modric's case, yeah, of course. You know, they can achieve tremendous things.
Yeah.
And that's what makes, I think, this game so interesting, so exciting. A couple other things in the game I want to touch upon. Real Madrid, very angry. Carlo, very angry. Very got booked angry. As well. The fact that De Bruyne's goal, the ball went out of play. You know me, I love Carlo, but I don't know. You can get angry with the linesman for not seeing the throw-in, but you can't get angry with VAR or the referee, I think. The referee has no vantage point whatsoever to be able to determine whether the ball went out of play.
Mm.
VAR cannot intervene because so much happened between that and the goal.
I mean, twice they recovered the ball.
So
twice they lost it.
Yeah, it's not like you can rewind the tape back 20 minutes.
But the linesman, the only thing I would say is, because when we didn't see a replay until really late, and then suddenly we didn't see what I think BeIN Sport had with the line and the ball from above, clearly showing that it was out of play. But the linesman was in a really good position to judge it. So he made a mistake, clearly. I think it's a really hard call to make. But yeah, I still think that it's a long shot to blame it on that, to blame the goal on that, basically.
No, I agree with you. I want to touch upon one of the guys' performance. We're both big Bernardo Silva fans.
Mm.
I thought his performance, the way he played in this game, this is slightly in keeping with perhaps the more conservative version of Pep that we saw.
Hmm?
But do you think he had a good game?
No. And we said before, it made sense to start him because of the pressing machine that he is, and we saw that against Bayern. The thing was, they didn't actually press that much because of the more cautious approach that they had, and because they had a lot of the ball. And then he gets beaten. I mean, Camavinga is his player, really. And the goal, that 1-2 with Modric, I think Rodri is too high anyway. And then it's a bit too easy for Camavinga. But yeah, the problem is he didn't really test Camavinga, who is not left back, enough for my liking, that Mahrez would have done more. And then he leads us nicely onto Pep not making any changes, which he did in Leipzig, if you remember, for the last 16 first leg, where he was 1-1 and didn't change anything at all. Does he do it because he thinks that, one, his team is getting good results, and two, they're well organized and well into the game, that if we change something, the new player coming in, for example, might have not the same impact of the guy that you took off? It's still very strange when you've got Foden, Mahrez, Alvarez on your bench, for example, not to bring on any of them.
But it's fascinating. I'm going to write a column about this week, because he's kind of like the polar opposite to Simone Inzaghi, who programs his changes ahead of time and uses, I think, all five changes. He's used them almost every game he's played. They've played this season. Personally, I think the psychological blow of getting another goal, and I would think so many of his players have been there for a long side. I don't think you're necessarily destabilizing the side by bringing in a Mahrez or a Foden or an Alvarez in that situation. I think you're putting on a guy with fresh legs who can give a new look and force Real Madrid to adjust. And then you go for the win. Because psychologically, winning 2-1.
Maybe you don't want to go for the win. Because if you go for the win, you might also expose yourself a bit more and concede one.
Possibly, but I mean, all you have to do is score one goal, and then you take it to extra time. And I mean, you have to. There's obviously give and take,
right? Yeah, of course.
But I'll tell you what, I guarantee you 1,000%. If he doesn't make any changes and Real Madrid nick a goal, it's going to be the Pep overthinking brigade again. Oh, why didn't he make a change late in the game? No question about it. Whenever Pep does something that is not predictable, he gets the overthinking label. Right?
Which is wrong. You're right. But I just don't think they were in such a dominant position in that second half to say, like, if he had brought on Mahrez or Foden, they would have gone and win the game. Because Grealish was still defending on the 90th minute, and so was Bernardo. And there's a lot of managers who will tell you, when things are working the way you want them to work, why would you change? And unless Grealish had said, I can't run anymore, I can't follow Carvajal up and down, if Bernardo had said the same, why would you? Do you see what I mean? I know that fresh legs would have been an extra threat for Madrid. But on the other hand, you say, like, my team is doing exactly what I wanted to do now. What would I change?
I don't know. I see your point, but I also think it's a bit counterintuitive to the spirit of City, which is to go out and to win every game.
I understand why
he did it. I think if he did it, he did it because he thinks this gives me the best possible chance of winning this game right now.
Yeah.
Not because he was necessarily being conservative in not making those changes. Because he could have made defensive changes, you know, more defensive changes. All right, let's wrap it up.
Who?
What do you mean?
Rico Lewis.
I mean, some people suggested Rico Lewis.
No,
I wouldn't go that far. But even like, if you bring in Foden, and you say, like, Grealish has been tussling with Carvajal the whole game or whatever, go and help out defensively. And if you see an opening, go forward, get forward, whatever. You know, you can do that. You're still bringing
in. Yeah, you can.
Even Mahrez, if you want, is just fit. Mahrez will presumably give you more.
No.
If he's fresh, right?
I think he's tough to come on in a game like this with 10 minutes to go. I really do.
I want to touch upon two Real Madrid things. Obviously, you mentioned Camavinga before and him coming inside, Modric going, covering his wing. I really likes that. We go back to this not natural left back. I'm asking you this because you know more about Camavinga than I do. And obviously, he's a guy who made his debut at 16. So he did not have a very long youth career.
No.
But I've heard people tell me that in his career, and I want you can tell me, A, if this is true, and B, if it's relevant, that he started out as a striker. He played center back for a number of years and then made his debut in central midfield for, probably, I guess, was what, like 4 years ago now, right? I wonder, is this like, okay, first of all, most professional footballers played striker when they were like 6 or 7,
yeah,
because
exactly,
they're more technical.
Which I think in his case is true.
It's probably, but it's also kind of irrelevant, right?
Yeah, completely.
Did he play central defender at youth level that you've heard of? And
so I saw him in the under 15, French League final, if you want, the equivalent of the academy competition that you have at that age. And he was already the best midfielder that I'd seen in a very long time. So he might have played centre-back before, I don't know, at under 12 level. But
maybe because he's the kind of guy who became, because he's not very tall, but he became, maybe he grew up, he developed earlier, so maybe at 12, I don't know.
I would find the striker bit when he was in grassroots football.
It's believable,
for sure.
Yeah. They all played striker.
But not after that, I just think. And
actually, David De Gea probably didn't.
Yeah,
I'm willing to bet David De Gea never played centre-forward in his career.
Yeah, yeah. The thing that amazed me the most, and we don't have to go too long on Camavinga, but I will repeat it again because I've said it already. Left back is a position that he doesn't like playing in. That prior to the World Cup in Qatar and the game where he played there against Tunisia, the third game of the group stage, had never ever played in that position before. And yes, he makes a mistake on the De Bruyne goal because his ball across the pitch that Rodri intercepts and then he leads to Grealish and the goal from De Bruyne. And I think it was maybe not a bad ball to make, but it's the kind of ball that is a good ball to make if you make it, if you see what I mean. And he should have maybe not played the ball that way. But before that, not just on the goal, I just thought it was amazing. For a 20-year-old who really only has 4 months in that position, and even still on and off, because against Liverpool, for example, he played in midfield.
Yeah.
So it's just incredible. And in a position, again, that he doesn't like playing. And he says it openly. He says it publicly. Again, he was on French television after the game, saying, no, this is not for me. This is not my position. I don't like it. I play there because the coach asked me, and I want to help the team. So for him, that's why I tweeted during the game. Imagine if he liked playing there. It would be even better.
Which brings us neatly to what we might see in the return leg from Real Madrid. Obviously, Eder Militao fit again.
Yeah.
We're discussing on air. I think 100% Militao starts.
Okay, I'm not so sure.
100% Militao starts. The question is it Militao and Rudiger? Do you move Alaba to left back? I think Militao and Rudiger, slightly clunky. I think it's going to be Militao and Alaba.
And you keep Camavinga left back.
And you keep coming at a left back. I think that's...
Yeah, that works.
That's what's going to happen, right? But you were saying you prefer to see Rudiger than Militao?
I'm just saying, after the performance that Alaba and Rudiger had in this first leg, in a way, if Carlo doesn't change it and keeps them in that second leg, you could not say like, oh yeah, you know, Militao had to come back. And also Militao hasn't been the greatest in the last 4 to 8 weeks when he played. I think Rudiger did a great job, and you said, yeah, but you know, you don't want him to be sent off in the second leg. Okay, of course, he's always on the limit.
Right.
Of course, I get that. I just think that I just like this partnership between Alaba and Rudiger. I love Militao, and I think he's going to be one of the best defenders in the world very, very soon. I just don't know. I think, like, you know, it's like, I mean, again, we go back to the thing. Why would you change something that has worked so well already? That's all.
Because it worked well in one game, in one circumstance, and you have somebody better coming in.
Yeah,
I don't. I think that's how Carlos
is
going to see it. But anyway, I am already getting excited.
Me too.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Real Madrid. Let's talk about the capital of world football. The entire universe focused on the Washington.
How did you feel watching this? Did you feel like, and I know we're both going to the second leg, but how did you feel that first leg, like watching it? Were you so proud, so emotional?
I was really proud of my city. I was proud. Not only, I was born, 300 meters from the San Siro, literally. So, and of course, it means more when you've experienced the high times, right? I've seen Milan play Inter in a Champions League derby before. We all have. We've both watched them, not a million years ago, but in this millennium.
Yeah.
Unlike when United won their treble, which was in the last millennium. We've seen them win Champions League titles.
Yeah.
So this was really cool. Now, what I was not expecting was this sort of performance from Milan.
Yeah.
And I certainly was not expecting. I mean, within 20 minutes, when I saw it's 2-0 and Bennacer is injured, I thought,
it's game over.
I mean,
it was over pretty much before that anyway, right? I think when you don't have Rafael Leao playing for your team, this Milan team doesn't become ordinary because it's still a very good team, but he loses a lot of his potential and ability. And I'm sorry, you cannot play semi-final of the Champions League with Krunic in midfield. It just doesn't work. And I know he's been a good servant to the club, and but it's too limited for me. When you play against a midfield of Barella in the form that he is, Mkhitaryan and Çalhanoğlu in the form that they are, when you even leave the bros on the bench and you face Krunic and Bernasek getting injured after 20 minutes,
Like, so I think look, I mean, they only have so many options in midfield. Like, the other guy, I guess they had Pobega. They could have played him in midfield, and of course he came on later. I thought the idea was, okay, we don't have Leao, so we're going to outwork them, be solid, wait for Theo to do something. Theo, I thought was the worst player on the pitch. And we're gonna match them for intensity in midfield. Our players are younger, they're more dynamic. Look at those old guys, Mkhitaryan, Calhanoglu, whatever. Obviously Dzeko at the other end. That was the plan. Yeah. And once Bennacer went out, and I think this is a little bit underreported, Pioli had a big call to make. Right? Do I keep the same system, even though we're two goals down, and stick with the original game plan, which would be to outwork them, or do I go more attacking? Put on Macias and, you know, obviously an attacking midfielder. And that totally, totally backfired. I know they didn't concede again.
No, yeah.
But they could have conceded a number of goals. Magic Mike saved at least two goals. Yeah. Inter hit the woodwork. For me, that was the call that backfired for Stefano Pioli.
Yeah, not that the options were great either in midfield to replace Bennacer. And I don't know, I think the start of the game just bombs with all your plans anyway. It destroys everything that you worked on and said, this is the tactical plan, this is what we're going to do. Uh-oh, you're almost three goals, because Calhanoglu scores when he hit the post after 16 minutes, and the rebound that Magic Mike saves, you're three down already. It was just a crazy start of the game where they were far too open. I mean, you mentioned Theo, worst performance. Tomori was, especially in the first half.
Lautaro, before the penalty, the little move to put him on his backside. Simon Kjær, who's been so experienced and whatever, leading to that situation.
Inter Milan have a better squad, right? You agree to that, than Milan, especially when Leao is out. Look at bringing Origi against bringing Lukaku on.
So it's funny you mentioned
Brozovic and Pobega.
They have a better squad. I have to say, about bringing on Divock Origi. Divock Origi as a winger, and the way he played in that game, I thought actually contributed to the team.
Not too bad, yeah.
I never want to see him play center forward for Milan ever again. Sure. But as a winger works. On the penalty, I thought this was the penalty which was given and then overturned.
Yeah.
I found myself kind of, I don't know, wanting to throw things at some of the punditry I saw on television. But was that a penalty? Was it the right call?
I didn't think so. I thought it's a great, the fall from Lautaro. No, I'm just saying that he dived. I'm just saying that the way he fell was really magnificent. And I think that's what made the call for the referee, who was in a great position. Then once you saw again on the replay, I think it was the right call to do it that way.
So the referee, Gil Manzano, I thought was really good.
Me too.
The way letting the game flow and so on. He got to the right decision in the end. I have to say this really makes my blood boil. They had a debate on one of the television stations that I watched about whether VAR had the right to intervene or not, whether it was clear and obvious. First of all, why don't you focus on the thing? Was the call correct in the end? Yes, it was. Second of all, and I remind everybody, especially those ex-refs who get paid on television to go and talk about it, it depends on the conversation between the referee and the VAR. If the referee doesn't feel that he's had a clear view of it, and I suspect what probably happened in this case, the referee, because it looked like a penalty in real time.
Yeah.
The VAR said, what did you see? And the referee said, oh, feet got tangled. And VAR probably said, no, they didn't. You might want to look at this again.
See it again, yeah.
And if that's what happened, I have no problem. This is where VAR worked. This is where it worked well. Don't make it about, don't be a freaking loser and make it about, well, VAR shouldn't have had the right to intervene. Seriously, get a freaking life. If I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong.
No, you're right. I just love how passionate you were about it.
But do you realize how twisted it is if we get into the question about, not about whether a call in the Champions League semifinal truly important is correct or not, but about whether VAR had the right to intervene. And then they get it wrong.
As well, they got it wrong. I think this is where I've got an issue as well.
With it. Magic Mike felt that Lautaro should have been booked for diving.
Yeah, there's an argument. I mean, that's why I shouted at my TV as well. I mean, not shouted, but I said, okay, you've overturned it now. The yellow card for Kjær was obviously cancelled. But I don't think it was a dive per se. You know, like the kind of dive that we can see sometimes where you get
yellow. So he should not have been booked.
No, but I can see Magic Mike's point, though.
I can see his point, but he's wrong.
Yeah,
I think he's not wrong. As wrong as some of those Muppets that we see, but he's wrong on this one. All right, just want to clear up.
No.
I feel like I want to take this opportunity to, we've talked about Milan and what went wrong, but I think, can we give a little bit of credit to Simone Inzaghi?
Oh, massively.
Because there's nobody, I don't know that there is a manager of a top club who gets so much stick. Part of it, he brings it upon himself because of the way he talks, and he's meek and he looks kind of goofy and dorky. But they hit the results. Let's not forget, this is a club which could be insolvent, you know, in 6 months' time, right? This is a club where he's competing in a certain way at a high level with a bunch of older players getting to do different things. I mean, Henrik Mkhitaryan has always been an attacking midfielder. Before that, he was a winger, right?
Yeah.
And then you're asking him to play in a playmaking position. Çalhanoğlu as well, right?
Yeah, yeah.
To get these guys to go and to work and to compete in midfield, especially when they're older, not easy.
No, not easy at all, you're right. And I mean, collectively, they're very strong. We mentioned many times that even when they went through kind of a bad patch in the league, they were still creating chances and it was just going their ways, but there was not really much to worry. It's just that when, and especially when Milan, on the other hand, clearly looked like the pressure got to them a bit. It's a huge occasion. It's a huge occasion, of course. And that this Inter team collectively, even if Dumfries maybe certainly was not as good as Di Marco on the other side, but when they play so well like that, it's just, I think it's just a joy to watch. And it deserves a lot of credit for someone who could have been sacked at Christmas or certainly was under a lot of pressure at the turn of the year. I think it's amazing to see how they turn things around and to see that they're quite close to a Champions League final again. You know, I think it's amazing. And again, I think the way he's managed his squad has been very clever, especially in the last few weeks. I mean, Dzeko said after the game, you know, I feel really fresh. He's 37. And by the way, I think we've said it before, but once he retires, they need to take his body and his brains and just see what's going on in there to have more Dzeko in the future, because it's just incredible to watch. Of course, there's the goal, but the second goal, the Mkhitaryan one, the way he makes his run to kind of free all that space for Mkhitaryan to run into once Di Marco has kind of squared the ball is just to show to all the kids who play that position.
So on that point, there's another thing that sets Inter apart is they play with two strikers, which, help me out here. Is there another top team that regularly plays with two strikers?
No, regularly, no. I mean, you could say, you know, in the teams that are in the top four of each league, that Newcastle sometimes, it's not the level of Inter, but I just mean like Callum Wilson and Alexander Isak. But apart from that, everybody has just a lone striker.
Everybody else, it's some version of 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1.
Yeah.
Now, the reason I think that's interesting is it's counterintuitive. I think it gives them an edge because opposing defenses aren't accustomed to it. And you get situations like we saw there on the second goal where Dzeko takes a defender with him, but equally there's another, Lautaro is there too, taking the other defender.
Exactly.
And that is what opens up the space. Now, you can't do that if there's just one dude in the middle.
Yep.
You know, I kind of, you know, everybody does things one way. And so, like, well, we can do what other people do and try to do it better, or we can try and do something different. And that's what Inzaghi does. I think that's a credit for him. The other thing that he does is his substitutions. Essentially, almost every game, he changes the wing backs and he changes the strikers. Almost every game, he uses. I think there's few managers who have realized and adapted to the five changes. You know, others use the five substitutions, like, well, Monday night, our pal did Zadaby, 4-0 down at halftime. He's like, uh-oh, let me make four changes, right? Like people, but he does it strategically. The players know ahead of time. It's pretty amazing. Very few of Inter's four strikers who are all very different them, right? And Dzeko, Lukaku, Lautaro, and Correa, they all have different skill sets. You're giving them different looks. You bring somebody in fresh with 30 minutes to go. It's an adjustment that the defender has to make. I think people can learn. Inzaghi's far from perfect. This team has many flaws, whatever. But I think when you talk about, I hate that word, marginal gains, trying to get an edge, I think there's still a lot that teams can do in terms of how do I exploit the five subs.
Yeah, yeah.
And by the way, you know, I feel about this, it's not just the thing about, oh, the five substitutions favor the bigger teams because, you know, look, City have, you know, Foden and Mahrez and whatever else on the bench. It's not that simple.
No, definitely.
It's more about the difference between your starter and the guy you bring in and what that guy can offer you in 30 minutes.
And to be fair, just to finish, I wonder if Pioli, especially once Leao was definitely ruled out for this game, if maybe going to a back three, and we saw Milan doing it before, and you've always said this has to be temporary because this is not this is not a team to play like that. But maybe for that game, it's very easy for us to say now, but maybe for that game, it might not have been a bad idea to just match up with what Inter we knew were going to offer and how they were going to set up. And I mean, we will never know. It's easy.
Yeah, you know, you talk about just for that game. Certainly, where it would have helped them was on the set piece, because if you look, it ends up with Kjær marking Lautaro, who's small, and Calabria, who's small, marking Dzeko, who's big. Now I know Bastoni and Acerbi were up there too, but you know, I'm assuming Tomori had picked up one of them or whatever. And it is kind of a zonal system, but clearly, that cannot be the plan. And if you look at, Dzeko doesn't even jump. He just uses...
Calabria doesn't even look at the ball.
But Calabria, I think, tries to move him or something. But like, dude, the guy outweighs you by like 30 kilos. Like, you're not going to be able to do it. And then he just puts out the big leg and turns it into the back of the net. So certainly, I think that's something Milan need to work on ahead of the second leg.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, enough San Siro. How can I say enough San Siro? There's never enough San Siro, but here's some quick hits instead.
Let's go, Gab.
Jules, we haven't talked about Messi enough lately. He was supposed to get a 2-week ban. It's now just 1 week. Has his fine been reduced too? And how are his teammates taking it?
So, back after 1 week after he apologized. And I think the club really appreciated the apologies. So back after 1 week, be available for the game at the weekend against Ajaccio if the manager wants him. The fine is the same though. I mean, it's a lot of money. It's 1.6 million. But for Messi, it's nothing, let's be honest here. And for his teammates, I think they were quite cross when he missed training and when he didn't show up. I think that they're happy that he's back. So
okay, can I make a bold prediction?
Yeah.
You know why the club are trolling Messi. I think they brought him back because obviously they play at home, and at home recently they've always lost and screwed up the title and gotten a bunch of abuse from the fans. I think they brought him back so that he can be there, be on the pitch when they lose again to Ajaccio.
Imagine,
he gets abused. No.
The ultras won't be there, so the reception will
be we'll get to that.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Gab, speaking of a return to Barcelona, Pep Guardiola says, I'm sure Messi will do everything he can to make it happen, and so will Joan Laporta.
So, first of all, it doesn't matter what Pep says. He gets asked the question. This is what I would answer if I were Pep. I don't blame him for saying that.
Of course.
I think Pep knows that if this was true, if they were both doing everything that they could, Messi would go there and play for a minimum salary and, you know, make what your friend Lamine Yamal or whatever his name is makes. Not going to happen, so let's just move on, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. It's probably not the way you want to celebrate an imminent title, but Jules, in addition to the messy mess, Neymar is reportedly getting ready to leave, although, again, where's he going to go? Real Madrid reportedly have not given up on Mbappe, and one of PSG's leading ultras groups says they will suspend their activities until next season. A lot to unpack there.
That's right. Let's start with Neymar, who for a long time didn't want to leave, but now he's considering leaving indeed if there's a good offer on the table.
From Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's probably the only one now. He would not go to Saudi Arabia anyway. He would stay in Paris if that was the case. He would like to come to England and play in the Premier League. Which, but let's be honest here, they're the only league, they're the only clubs who can afford him now. You will have to pay a transfer fee, or you can have him on loan with an option to buy. I think PSG would be very happy to look at any ways of making this possible, but he still earns 40 million a year.
Right. All these people who want to have an experience elsewhere, make too much money, take a freaking pay cut.
Yeah. And then, you could do. Right? I was not told.
I found out Kieran Trippier took a pay cut, apparently, when he went to Newcastle.
Exactly. For the Ultras, they're not happy with the club, with Nasser Al Khelaifi. They don't feel respected. So until the end of the season, they're not going to do anything. And for Kylian and Real Madrid, he's not going to move this summer. He will be there next season. Even if that's the last year on his contract, there's no way the club will sell him this summer anyway.
All right.
So here we go. Reports in England suggest that the Rain Group, you know, the group that is handling the sale of Manchester United, have named Sir Jim Ratcliffe, who's one of the contenders, as the preferred bidder. Gab, is that important?
No, it's not important. It's stupid. It's just to keep this thing in the air. It doesn't mean anything because there's only two bidders. It doesn't matter who the Rain Group prefers. It's not their club. The Glazers will decide. This is attractive, obviously, because if supposedly Joel and Avram want to stay involved, and so Sir Jim wouldn't be taking over the whole club, and so for a period of time at least they would still be involved, although if they want to be involved so much they can just have enough money, they can go and buy a season ticket at Old Trafford. No, this is pretty irrelevant. And again, I think increasingly there is the other track, the one where the Glazers borrow money from different groups. I think that's still very much in play. This story's going to rumble on. And like I said, deadlines, preferred bidders, doesn't matter. Sergio Busquets won't be returning to Barcelona next year. Jules, on the show last night, we did a bunch of tributes as if he were retiring, which kind of slightly bugged me. No, and certainly bugged Craig Burley. He hasn't indicated that he's retiring. He might be back.
No,
and of course, there's rumors that he could be headed to Saudi, because obviously that really moves the needle commercially. And what an exciting player to watch. Yeah,
one last big paycheck for Sergio Busquets. I mean, what an incredible career at Barcelona he had. From a little boy at the Masia to winning pretty much everything. I think this would be the 9th La Liga title, the 3 Champions League, etc. And we're not going to go again about his position and how he played and in a way just changed the dynamic in terms of holding midfielders like him. I don't know where he's going to go, if he's into Miami, MLS, or somewhere in
Paris
Saudi
Arabia.
No, I think he's done in Europe. And to be fair, I don't think you would want to play for another club in Europe anyway. So good luck to him, whatever he does, and if that big paycheck comes. But yeah, I think it was time for him to move from Barcelona, and I think maybe it could have been earlier, because his level and his impact are clearly...
Also, the way Barcelona play doesn't suit him
exactly anymore. But still, you know, good luck to replace him. That was a stinker from Milan on Wednesday night. We explained that at length. But there was one really, really good news off the page, Gab, is that the Rafael Leao new deal extension is done up to 2028.
That's right. So he's gonna end up earning around about 10 million euros gross a year, which works out to just under 200 grand. If you're thinking in UK weekly terms, 2 million euro signing bonus, release clause up to 150 million euros, which I think is important because it gives him an out. Suggests also why he took
and
a little
bit less money.
And it's a fair
reflection of his talent.
Definitely a fair reflection. And I think what really moved the needle on this, and Maldini spoke about this, is they were able to resolve the issue for now that he's not going to be liable in the dispute between Sporting and Lille. Jules, I'll just give you all the Saudi questions today. The Times are reporting that Hugo Lloris, who's got a year left on his contract, has received an offer worth £50 million a season from Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
What else?
Clearly, the Saudis want to attract a lot of kind of European superstars, if you want, because they've been mentioning Sergio Ramos as well and Luka Modric, players like that, who are either at the end of their contract this summer or just with 1 year left, and offering huge money to kind of do what Qatar did all those years ago. Remember when the old stars used to go there? Knowing Hugo, I doubt he will go, but maybe. I mean, it's a huge paycheck, the last one in his career. But I'd be surprised if he went.
If he does go, I can guarantee you he won't get done for drink driving in Saudi Arabia. Sorry, Hugo, we love you.
Juventus will find out whether their 15 points penalty will be reinstated fully or only part on May 22nd. Gab, how is it looking for them?
It's so difficult to predict. I think, so essentially, for those, you know, the appeals court basically sent it back down to the court where it was at before, saying, like, when you get in the 15-point penalty, you didn't explain why. So they're going to get other judges to look at it. I think pretty much anything's on the table. I think it's more likely they will get a lesser points penalty if they do get a points penalty. And of course, they can still appeal it, which is going to totally screw up the end of the season. But hey, you know, welcome to the madhouse. Other important date for Juve fans on your calendar, October 26th is when the preliminary hearing in their criminal case begins.
It's not over yet, yeah.
Oh, no. It's far from over. And then they have the other case with the bonuses. And yeah, no, it's going to go on a while. Ali Khan gave a long interview to Bild. He said that $150 million for Osimhen is a big risk. But weirdly, when asked about Colomwani and Harry Kane, he says, no, they're under contract with other clubs. I'm not talking about them. I don't get this. Is Osimhen not under contract?
No, it's just that they can't go and sign him. Whereas I think they're going to go for Kane and Colomwani. So you don't care about Naples. You can say anything you want because you're not going to have to deal with them in the summer over Osimhen. Kane and Colomwani are your target, so don't upset anybody. Don't talk about them. Well done, Oliver Kahn.
Hey, how to win friends and influence people, exactly. Right?
Gav, I'm dying to talk more about PSG, of course, especially negative things. What did Jose Mourinho say when he was asked about reports linking him to my team?
He said, well, if they're looking for me, they couldn't find me because nobody's been in touch. Now, I think Jose's playing a long game here, obviously, because obviously his future at Roma is uncertain, yeah, whether he gets an extension or not. And so he doesn't come out and say, oh, no, I'm happy at Roma, blah, blah, blah. No, he says like, oh, well, they couldn't find me. So, and we know, obviously, it's not hard to find Jose Mourinho.
Yeah.
So make of that what you will. Mason Mount is still just over a year away from free agency at Chelsea, but Mauricio Pochettino, who everybody is convinced is on his way to Stamford Bridge,
but not you,
is supposedly, well, you know, facts change, opinions change, is supposedly a big fan. Jules, how do you see this ending up?
I see him staying. I see him working really well with Poch. I think this is a profile that Poch really likes. I think he's been, and rightly so, he's waiting to see who's coming in. And surely we will find out soon now. And I think that will have a big impact on whether he wants to go or not, if he signs a new deal or not, etc., etc. But I think the Mount Pochettino partnership could work really well here.
Yeah, Mount and Nkunku and, you know, the rest of the attacking midfield.
Nkunku and Mount are not the same players at all.
No. It's just I'm fascinated. I'm fascinated by how all these pieces are.
It's not going to be easy to fit them all together.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I think it would be crazy for Chelsea to let Mason Mount go.
Oh, I agree with you there. It's crazy. He's had a bad season, but it's crazy that he's even in this situation.
Yeah, completely. Atalanta have been fined, and the stand from which the abuse of Dusan Vlahovic at the weekend came will be closed for one game. Gab, were you expecting more? Should it have been more?
I think it was the first time this season that this happened with Atalanta, and so they applied the rules. They're closing for one game. It's going to be against Verona, with whom they have a big rivalry. I hope the message goes through. What I'm expecting more from is from Atalanta. Luca Percassi was in the U.S. I'm assuming he's going to do it to visit Stephen Pagliuca, who's the other co-owner. I'm hoping a light bulb goes off and says, we need to actually say something, not just like not appeal this. We need to say something. We need to do something. If you don't have cameras like Juve with facial recognition, and, you know, it's like the Chinese state big brother watching you and you can't chuck out individuals, fine. But do something symbolic. Do something meaningful. Morcon. He says Thomas Tuchel's pre-match team talks are so inspirational. He feels like he wants to run out on the pitch as well, Jules.
I mean,
and I tell you what, probably his age, he'd be better than Jan Sommer.
That's true. I mean, Oliver Kahn is not really the kind of, you know, he does talk about feelings. This is not what he does. So for him to speak like that, I'm like, I was reading it. I was like, really? He goes like, oh, it's so inspirational. It's so this, it's so that. Okay, well, he hasn't inspired. It hasn't really worked out so well on the pitch.
It's also weird. I understand you. You got to double down on Tuchel, right? Obviously, it's your choice and back him.
Yeah.
But even what made Tuchel great in the past, I don't think, certainly when he was at Chelsea, I don't remember speaking to players and saying like, oh, Tuchel is so inspirational.
Yeah, no, not even in Paris. Like, maybe it's the language thing. I don't know.
I don't know. They've always said like, yo, he's a genius and whatever and his tactics, but it was never like chest-thumping inspiration. But
definitely.
Whatever.
Prosecutors in Brazil have charged 16 people, including 7 professional footballers, in a betting-related scandal. Gab, they're not accused of fixing games, sorry, but it's all about spot betting.
Yeah, and this is something which I think they should take a look at. It's things like, you know, will this player receive a yellow card? When will the first yellow card be? We've been through it here in England. Players who are stupid think that they can do this and get away with it.
Yeah.
I think it's... To me, this isn't even betting. To me, this is you're really a dork if you go and you make these bets. And a man, Eduardo Bauerman, according to the court filings, who's a defender at Santos, supposedly took $10,000 to get a yellow card in a game. It's not stuff that it undermines the league, obviously needs to be dealt with, and yeah. I'm glad it's being dealt with criminally. Doesn't admire undermine kind of the whole sanctity of the league, but I'm glad, you know, they've only had betting on professional football in Brazil since 2018, I believe. So I think they're still working things out in terms of oversight and discipline. Let's talk Women's Super League here in England. Chelsea beat Leicester 6-0 and are now a single point behind Manchester United with a game in hand. Jules, how's it looking for you? You're on the Emma bandwagon, aren't you?
I mean, it's looking good for them. I would have rather Arsenal to win it, of course, but it's looking good for them. The game in hand is against West Ham away.
Is that good or bad?
No, I think it's okay. It's good. They should win that one. Then the big one is at home to Arsenal, which is the penultimate. Is penultimate?
Penultimate, second to last.
Second to last. Game of the season for them in what has been an incredible season. I know we mentioned it a little bit briefly in a few shows ago, but the race for the title with Arsenal at some point, with Manchester United, with City doing really well as well domestically, and Chelsea, of course, at some point were in for trouble. Now it's only a double. It'd still be great. So, I mean, good luck to them. They certainly look in impressive form right now.
Can I ask a question? So there's 12 teams in the Women's Super League, right? Which means that they play each other home and away, and they end up playing 22 games in a season.
Yeah.
I'm assuming there's only 12 teams because they don't. If they had 18 teams or 16 teams, it would dilute the standard, fair enough.
Yeah, there's a second division, but where you go up and down, of
which
course,
I'm assuming is substantially worse, otherwise they'd have this. But why don't they play more games? Like, why don't they, say, play each other three times, for example, and have a 33-game season? If they're getting decent crowds now...
Yeah.
It's not like the fixture list is so congested. They all go out early, the English teams, in the Champions League anyway, right?
Not really.
No, not forever.
But that's a good point. I don't know.
When we're talking about the financial sustainability of women's football, like, why not play more? Yeah. Just wondering, just checking it out there.
The Greek Cup final between AEK Athens and PAOK is due to be played on May 24th, Gab. It's supposed to be played abroad because of the fear of crowd problems and everything, but they don't have a confirmed venue yet. What's going on?
This is a weird one. It's pretty embarrassing. I don't think you should ever have a cup final abroad, especially because you decide this ahead of time. I know there was violence last year. Like, you know, you play league games. You can police those to some degree. Yeah. Surely you can police a cup final, too. It would be cool if they played it abroad, maybe in Melbourne. That was one of the mooted suggestions, where there's a giant Greek
community.
Oh, in London.
There's a big Greek community in London as well.
New York City, there's a big Greek community there, too. But they don't have a confirmed venue. I'm assuming they need to figure something out. I think it would be horrendous if they played this behind closed doors.
Yeah.
Dani Olmo has a year left on his contract with Leipzig and shockingly is being linked with a move away. Just could they lose Nkunku and Dani Olmo in the same summer?
I think they will, Gab. I think they will. I think they will have to. That's the thing.
Does it mean they're going away and crawling back into their holes never to be seen again?
Oh, but the Nkunku deal was done a long time ago. Yeah. We said that. I think for Dani Olmo, they tried to convince him to extend and to stay a bit longer. If you remember, he arrived from Zagreb quite young there. And I think he's now established himself as a really good player that could easily find a club that is going to spend, I don't know, between 30 and 40 million, you would think, for Dani Olmo. It's good value considering he's maybe a bit less, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's because he's got a year left.
He goes on a year left.
Chelsea and Barcelona need more wingers, right? So
I imagine. And I know he's a bit injury prone, certainly in the last couple of seasons, but I would take Dani Olmo.
Yeah, I'm a phenomenal player, I think.
Angel Di Maria is a free agent this summer at Juve and says that he would love to sign a new deal and stay in Turin. Gab, I think I know what you're going to say.
Yes, which is adios, Angel, cuídate bien. Why can't he go to Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, but I think they're going to try.
Why do the good ones go to Saudi Arabia and the bad ones have to stick around?
Please take Paredes as well, Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, no, take your friend Paredes. He already has Messi's trophies, some of them, which he somehow are in his house.
Yeah, they can go together.
Like, honestly, this guy, I think he started 14 games. He started fewer games this season than he did in the 6 years previously that he was at Paris Saint-Germain, when he started very few games because there's always something wrong with him. There's always something up with him. Enough. You're 35. They're paying you enough. Honestly, this shouldn't even be contemplated. Juve, come to your senses. I tell you what, if Cristiano Giuntoli comes, as people hope, all this nonsense, he's already talking about sustainability, blah, 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 youth. This is the last thing you need. And I'm not saying he's a bad person. He's a phenomenal footballer. But Clearly, he has his priorities. He's not a fit at the club. Don't even contemplate this. Don't tell me how much you love Turin and then La Mole and Giulio Cesare and Piazza Giulio Cesare, all this stuff. Enough. And how much your family loves living in Turin, which, you know, nice city. But, dude, you moved from Paris. Come on. Yeah. But whatever. But I suppose you also lived in Manchester before. So I guess things even out. Maybe it reminds you of Manchester, the climate. I don't know. Enough. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang isn't playing much for Chelsea these days.
Nope.
So he found time to go to Gabon and meet the president, who asked him to unretire from international duty. Jules?
So two things here. I mean, I've never been called by my president to come and see him. So I don't know. I don't know if you have to, if you feel like, can we do it on Zoom? Or do you actually physically need to go to see the president?
From the pictures I saw, he's in the room with another dude who I assume is the president.
No, clearly felt like he had to go instead of doing it on Zoom from his kitchen. Don't tell me this could not have waited for the end of the season. I suspect...
Why? Well, he's got nothing else to do.
But I don't think it's a good lookout. I really don't think it's a good... So I guess they had a day off, maybe. Going to Gabon on your day off.
Wait, Messi can go to Saudi Arabia? But
no, it's not a good idea. But you know, I don't know. I don't think right now he's in anybody's good books. And he's still under contract for Chelsea, which, by the way, this summer is going to be a bit of a headache.
You should send the bill to Tuchel.
I don't know what to say anymore about that guy.
Actually, Tuchel worked with him before. He's a center forward. Bayern need a center forward. Why not? No, I'm just kidding. I don't want to give any ideas. But I will say this about Aubameyang. For, obviously, he's Gabon international. I didn't realize this. He's played like 70 times for Gabon. And the reason I point this out is Aubameyang's dad was obviously a professional footballer as well.
Yeah, he was a Gabon captain.
He didn't grow up in Gabon. He obviously grew up in Milan, I presume before that in France.
I don't know. Yeah.
He's never actually lived there, as far as I know.
No.
To have that allegiance to your country, which, by the way, Gabon... Not a major footballing. It's not like he's the dude's Nigerian where, like, you know, you're competing for... I know they've had some success in the Cup of Nations, but, I mean, I think that reflects really well for him. He's somebody who clearly has a good sense of his roots. I know we've made so much fun of him. We've been so critical of him. But I think that part of it, I think, really reflects well on him.
Yeah. Gareth Bale's agent, Jonathan Barnett, says that he doesn't want to play football anymore and therefore won't be joining Wrexham.
Jonathan Barnett doesn't want to play football anymore? No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, look, I think this whole story was never a serious story to begin with.
I
gave Wrexham more publicity. Hey, look, you know, we're team players at the company. You know, they're available on Disney Plus. You can, but this is Wrexham.
Yeah.
This whole thing about he doesn't want to play football anymore, if I were unkind, I would say that he kind of said that, certainly club football, many years ago. We kind of got that sense. So, yeah, like, nice story. Draw a line under it. Gareth Bale, next chapter. Liverpool's throwing coach, Thomas Gronemark, a close friend of Steve Nicol, is leaving the club after 5 years, Jules. Not everybody liked the idea of a throwing coach when he was appointed.
No, I still have some people now and again who send me again that video clip from the ESPN FC show where me and Stevie strongly disagreed. On the benefit of having a throw-in coach like Thomas in the team, because it was one evening after a Liverpool game where they scored a goal after a throw-in move that they clearly worked on before. And I said, great, you see all the work that they do on throw-ins, at training. And Steve was like, wow, this is crazy. You don't need a coach like that. What next? A set-piece coach? I said, Stevie, you've got a coach for goalkeepers, for strikers, for defenders, for set-pieces. Why not for throw-ins? I think... Thomas Gronemark and more clubs now are using him or people like him. And I think he's good. It's, again, small things in a game that can make the game won for you.
100% agree. I remember years ago, I think Brentford hired a kicking coach to try to, you know, improve actual players' techniques. Because you know what? You can improve as you get older.
Bebeto and Romario were best friends in leading Brazil to the 1994 World Cup win, if you remember. And we all remember their baby rocking celebrations, of course. But now, Gab, they've fallen out badly.
Yeah, and it's politics getting in the way. You know, in their polarized times, we've had a lot of people saying that, you know, they've lost friends and fallen with family members because they have different politics and divisions. Guess what? Footballers are human beings, too. It happened to them, too. Romario recently calling Bebeto a traitor.
Oh, what?
And selfish. Romario, obviously involved directly in politics. I think he would probably describe himself as center-right, although he did support Bolsonaro. Bebeto, and on the other hand... starting out originally politically, I think he was with Romario, and then coming out and saying, you know what, I'm a Lula guy, which is more center left or even left. So I guess these people are human. What is interesting is this is like a Brazilian thing. We don't often hear, like, in Europe of, you know, ex-footballers openly discussing their political views. No, but, you know, good for them. I kind of feel like, you know, Romario's given up a lot of time and stuff with his political career.
Is he a senator or deputy now?
He certainly was MP, a senator at some point. So he is trying to use his fame to give something back, whether you agree with him and his politics or not. Jules, that brings us to an end.
Aw, man.
But we're going to be back on Monday because it's a huge weekend in the Premier League. And you heard it here first. Jules says City will drop points at Goodison against Everton and the mighty Sean Dyche. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.